This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I'm doing well.
I mentioned Speed Racer. I absolutely love that movie.
Me too.
So I'm going to start off with Speed Racer because fuck it.
Yeah, good.
Huge fan of the Wachowskis.
Yeah, me too.
Love the film. It didn't really do as well as I had hoped at the box office. When you look back on it, are you sort of like ahead of the time? It was ahead of the time?
I think so. You know, who knows why certain films don't commercially work out the way you hope they would. I think it was visually ahead of the time. I think people really didn't understand the sort of memes in our minds of information gathering, didn't really understand it. And I think it was kind of, I also think that, you know, the Wachowskis made a kids movie with really, really big sort of subversive adult themes in it. And I think that that sort of threw Warner Brothers for a loop on how to market the movie. You know, I think if you look back on how that movie was rolled out, you know, they weren't sure on how, whether to market it for kids or whether to market it as a family movie or to market it as a Wachowski's movie. And so I think that, you know, I really don't know. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. Obviously, I was really disappointed because I just loved working with that whole group of people, and I was hopeful that there would be more of that story.
Sure.
And so I wanted it to work commercially, but, you know, that's one of the mysteries of the sort of film industry and stuff. You just don't know. But I'm the biggest fans of the Wachowskis in the whole world. I can't wait to see Cloud Atlas.
My favorite film here.
Cool. I'm so happy to... When we were doing Speed Racer, Larry gave me the book and said, this is, you know, a movie, something that I would like to make into a film someday. And I read the book and I was blown away by it and thought it was beautiful and totally understood why he was really into it. So I'm just happy that they've made it, and I hear really good things about it.
Absolutely. Well, no matter the commercial success of Speed Racer, there are a lot of very vocal fans like me.
Good.
Moving on to being here at TIFF. What made you? How did you get involved with Emperor? What was the, you know?
It was just, you know, sent the script by the guys that I work with in Los Angeles, and they were pretty excited about it. Read it and was just really, really moved by the script. The script was very moving, and got on the phone with Mr. Weber, and he was in New Zealand, and he told me what he wanted to do with the film, and all the people that he had gathered to be a part of making it, and you know, we really hit it off on the phone, and it just felt like something that was absolutely one of those projects that comes along that I just felt really compelled to be a part of.
I mean, well, I was going to say that it's obviously based on real stuff. Talk a little bit about, is it, when you're getting ready for a role that's based on, you know, real things, real events, obviously a little bit's been Hollywoodized or whatever.
Sure.
How different is that for the preparation process for you as an actor in terms of, do you know what I mean?
Yes. It depends. I mean, on this one, I felt it was really important to do some research on Mr. Fellers and did as much of that as I felt was necessary. I felt it was necessary to educate myself about this moment in historical time and the context in which that sat, because frankly, I didn't really know a lot about that time at all. And that was one of the things that really intrigued me about the film, was I was like, you know, it's amazing how little attention, at least in my mind, that I had paid to how World War II ended, and how little in my own consciousness the Japanese-U.S. conflict and the South Pacific and the atom bombs that we dropped and the, you know, how that ended and MacArthur's role in that and Fellers' role in that and that sort of 2-week period of time where the gathering of war, you know, war criminals and putting people on trial and determining what was going to happen with Hirohito and the decision that was made and how different history could have played out if different decisions were made. And I knew very little about that, so that was one of the things that was, you know, whenever I really do love history, and I know very little history, because, you know, I think you could spend your whole life dedicated to learning history and still not even come close to having any concept of the bigger global. And whenever I get to combine doing something storytelling that I'm really challenged by and compelled to be a part of, and I get an opportunity to learn history and sort of the research would require that, it's a great combination, and I really felt that way on this one.
I agree with you. You really could spend your whole life and whatever. I mean, as an actor, I've spoken to many actors that prefer the Clint Eastwood method of two takes, and other actors love the David Fincher method of 50. Where are you on that little scale?
That's changing. That's changed for me over the time. I think when I was starting out, I liked the two takes thing a little bit better. Because I think when I was starting out, I felt that I should, you know, my interpretation of the way a scene was going to go or what was happening in a scene should be, you know, sort of done rather early in the process. And as I've gotten deeper into the process of making films and television and such, I think I have more trust in the fact that you really never know what you're going to find after the 25th take, you know. And part of that's also, you know, some of the theater experience that I've had. You know, I did a play recently, and I did 106 performances of the play, and I still felt after 106 shows that I was discovering stuff in the material. And that was a real learning lesson for me, because I felt that, you know, it's to apply that to film, you know, if you have the time and people are curious enough to continue to do takes, you never know what you're going to find in it. And so I think that's evolved for me over, you know, the 20 something years that I've been doing this.
When you sign on a project, you obviously have that script, and over the course of making it, a lot can change on any project. Mm-hmm. Finished film can be nothing like what you signed on for. Mm-hmm. How did the finished film compare, Emperor, to what you signed on for?
Well, I haven't seen it.
Oh. Well, that's a very applicable question.
But I'll tell you this, you know, one of the beautiful things about making Emperor was it was one of the only times that I've ever been in a storytelling situation where I went to New Zealand on January 15th, I think, and we didn't start shooting for 3 weeks or something. And Peter and I got a chance to go through the script on four different occasions, go through the script, make notes, talk about scenes, and then the script would be handed off to the writer, and 2 days later we would have rewrites that either, you know, successfully incorporated the notes that we had talked about or maybe didn't. And we had these rounds of note sessions, and the writer was right there. So it just went round and round for a few weeks, and, you know, that was just the kind of thing that you don't get either in television. You don't get it on huge budget films with studios behind them, because they don't want to, you know, they want to get right into the shooting of something. They're like, this is the script, go shoot it. And this had a really cool sort of evolutionary process involved so when we did start shooting the script, we felt that we'd been through it pretty carefully. So, but as far as what the film looks like now after, you know, Peter's been in the editing room for months, and we've had several, you know, all the producers and people giving note sessions and such. So, you know, it's definitely changed.
I definitely have to open the door and ask you about Alex Cross, because mm-hmm. I've seen that image of you just ripped up,
right.
Muscular. If you don't mind, how did you get involved in that project, and what did you do in terms to get ready for that role?
I was in London doing a play there, and Rob Cohen called me, and I had met Rob on another project a few years back, and we really just clicked in the room and just dug each other on a lot of levels, and both felt like, hey, you know, sometime we're going to work together on something. And he called me and told me what he had in mind, and, you know, initially I was like, man, you know, I mean, I really didn't, you know, think, you know, sometimes you're just like, wow, it's really interesting that you're thinking about me for that, you know. But then I was really inspired by the way he talked about it and what he wanted to do, and I said, yes, but this is what's going to have to happen. I'm going to have to lose a bunch of weight, because when I read the script, I just really imagined this guy was kind of burning. His internal dialogue and his rationalization of his philosophy was burning so intensely that he would just look like that. Not because he spent any time in a gym or because he was careful about his diet, although I'm sure he only fuels himself with like very intense things, but I felt that that was the image that jumped out at me. So I said, listen, I'm going to have to ask the film to get a meal plan for me for the next 6 months and a trainer. And they found this guy, Simon Watterson, who works out of London, and he's kind of specializes in this notion of people who want to radically, you know, sort of alter what they look like and be. And I met with him, and he was the trainer, but both a nutritionalist and a trainer, and sort of set up this program. And I just worked my ass off for 6 months and was really disciplined about some pretty intense dieting. And I lost, you know, close to 40 pounds. And, you know, when I look at that image that was floated on the internet, you know, it's like, that's pretty much exactly what I had in mind. I mean, I feel like I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish as far as, you know, what he would look like and how he would carry himself. And so,
as an actor, though, how hard is it to maintain where you're, I'm imagining you were feeling a certain way looking that way, you know, like, mm-hmm. or how hard is it to maintain that over the course of a shoot, also acting while also being a
hard
kid, you know?
Hard. Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I didn't sleep well that whole period of time. And I don't know why that was, you know, I don't know if it was sort of fear of failure, not pulling it off. You know, I had sort of like ideas that I wanted to accomplish with that role, and I thought it was just a really interesting role to play. I don't know if it was some of the sort of thought process that I, you know, because, you know, I wanted to try to figure that guy out. I mean, why a guy does that and the way that he did it and the sort of, you know, the hyper arrogance that he has, and I wanted to figure out his philosophy. And at least for myself, you know, not that anybody's going to, that's going to be communicated in the film, because I don't think it necessarily will. But for me, it was important that I find what motivates the guy. And so I don't know if it was that, or I don't know if it was just maybe the diet, you know. I mean, you know, I was eating unlike I'd ever done in my life. And I think it really shifted my metabolism in a way that I would go to sleep at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and I'd be awake at, you know, 4:35 every day, you know, just up, but feeling fine, not feeling like exhausted, but just
also
awake.
I'm sure not eating fried food and I'm no. Yeah, like, you know what I mean, when you're eating super healthy, it does change your everything about you.
Yeah,
it really does.
And it does, and I learned a lot, man. I mean, it'll that project and the experience I had doing the dieting and exercise will forever change the way that I eat and the way that I exercise. I mean, I thought that I kind of knew that stuff because I was an athlete all the way through college, and I sort of had my own sort of dogmatic version of what I would do.
Right, sure.
And it radically shifted my ideas about nutrition and exercise. And so
I completely understand. I definitely want to also ask you about a project I'm really excited about, but it's been going through a little bit of turmoil, is World War Z.
I think that the turmoil thing has been, it's one of those things where we live in a world these days where somebody can float an idea on the internet, and they can have absolutely no basis for expertise on that idea. They can be...
This is why I'm coming to you.
Anyone. And they can have no basis in fact at all, and suddenly it becomes sort of like a notion out there that World War Z is having problems. Everybody that I've spoken to who's seen the film, it rocks, dude. It's going to kick ass. And the only issue that I'm hearing with the film is that they want to work on the third act, the end of the film. Now, obviously, it's supposed to be a trilogy. So, I think they're fine-tuning an ending that feels like this movie wraps. And in the original script, I always felt that it was the perfect combination of a complete film on its own and yet at the same time left you going like, oh, my God, we need another installment. And so I think they're just really fine-tuning that, and it might require some additional shooting to get it the way they want it, and I hear that Mr. Lindelof has been brought in to help with that.
I heard that Damon had an idea that he gave to Drew Bedard, who did Cabin in the Woods with Joss, and he was working on the actual script, like helping on the third act. I don't know if what's true or not true.
I don't either. I mean, I don't even know.
Someone's part of something.
So yeah, you know it.
So who do you, for people that don't know, who do you play in the film?
I play my role in that film in the first is really just an introduction. More. It's not done yet. It's in the process. So he's a Navy SEAL who basically, you know, Mark and I's idea on that was he's a guy who basically is Brad Pitt's character goes off to find a solution to this global epidemic, and he is a global problem solver, has a history with the UN and sort of disaster relief, and he leaves his family in a situation on a quarantined flotilla, essentially like a military ship, and this Navy SEAL who rescued Brad Pitt and his family off a rooftop in Philadelphia, helicopter rescue, and this guy is kind of slightly fractured by what's happening in the world. I mean, he's spent his whole life mission-oriented, spent his whole life sort of target-oriented, and the enormity of what's going on and the massive human loss of what's going on and his inability to feel like he has any control. So you've got the Brad Pitt character that's this sort of global macro problem solver, and you have a Navy SEAL who's very, very mission-oriented and very micro-oriented, feeling that he has absolutely no way to control anything. It kind of fractures him, and he fixates on the fact that he feels that this man has sort of abandoned this family, and he co-opts this family, basically takes over while the Brad Pitt character is out finding a solution to the problem. So at the end of the film, you have him trying to come back to his family, and yet his family has essentially been taken over by a man who has is broken.
Before I run out of time with you, I definitely have to, I'm sure you get asked about it all the time, but one of my favorite shows is Lost.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have to ask you, just, you know, it's been a little while now. When you look back on the experience, are you sort of like, what's that initial thing when you look back on it? Like that initial feeling? Or is it something that it's still too close?
No. It's amazing how quickly it feels like it was a long time ago already. it's full of really good memories, man. I mean, you know, that was a hell of a great time. And I still think a lot about what we made. And, I still have... people come up to me, and you can tell by they want to say something how much it meant to them, and so it's full of my memories of it are full of warm and good and positive energy, and I'm really happy with where I am now, where we're living, and what my life is like, and the sort of different pace of being involved in some films every now and then is much more sort of where I want to be as far as that goes. But I will always be very, very proud to have been a part of that 6-year experience and what that story was, and what it meant to people. You know, it's a bit, I feel really, really good about it.
Yeah, speaking for a lot of fans, I'll just say thank you for entertaining me every week on that show, because I fucking loved it.
That's cool, dude.
I really did. Now, moving on back into the film thing, what's it like now in terms of, like, the projects you want to pick? What is, like, maybe there's a genre you haven't done, or is there, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, see, I certainly don't go about, like, well, I, you know, played a serial killer here, and I just did a period, historical period piece, you know, I'm part of a big budget zombie movie, what am I going to do next?
That's about zombies?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So I don't have any plan whatsoever, dude. I have no idea what's next. But, you know, I mean, sooner or later, I'd love to do a comedy. I mean, I think that, you know, people don't think that that's in my wheelhouse because I've sort of played a lot of dramatic stuff. And that's certainly a side of myself that I want at some point in the right context and the right stuff that I find really funny. You know, the truth is that I don't... You know, a lot of the comedies that I see rolling out these days, I don't find that funny, dude. So, I mean, when I come across one that I think is really funny and smart at the same time, which then, you know, and I'm offered it, then I'll be really excited to do that.
Isn't that sort of what you're waiting on, though, with Alex Cross, to be able to be like, have the average person on the street, that's the dude who was on Lost?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or that's Matthew Fox. Like,
yeah, that was, you know, I obviously, you know, you spend 6 years in somebody's in their homes playing Jack Shepherd, and I was intrigued by the notion of having something that was going to challenge me, doing something that I hadn't done before, and also kind of change, you know, doing something that people wouldn't expect me to do. And I'm always going to continue to try to do things that people wouldn't expect me to do.
And I think it's probably one of my last questions, or else she's going to give me the hook or something. But the comic book genre seems to be just incredibly popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers, Dark Knight, I mean, it's a huge genre. A lot of people, are there any comics you read or any comic book characters that you've always been a fan of, you know, that you maybe, you know what I mean? Because it's a huge genre. I'm just curious if that's something that interests you.
I, off the top of my head, I can't. I mean, you know, the truth is that that stuff's going to be exhausted pretty soon because they've been churning them out, man.
I mean, a few years ago, but this year is the biggest it's ever been.
I know, and so once they've established all those franchises, they'll just keep doing, you know, more Avengers and more Iron Mans and so on and so forth. But as far as, like, original material that is part of our comic book history, they don't have a lot of stuff left. But I would be... I'm a huge comic fan. I love graphic art, and I just love... You know, I love that kind of thing. So, I mean, if it was the right thing, I'd jump all over it. I think it would be really fun. And if it was something that my 11-year-old boy was fired up about, then it would make it even doubly fun, you know? I mean,
yes.
So...
I understand. My last question for you. What are you doing next? Do you know?
No.
Is that a good feeling?
It's a great feeling. That's part of what... why I wanted to sort of move into this type of phase of my career. And the only reason that I've said that I won't do television again is for that very thing that you just asked. Is because if I was doing a big TV show right now, like I've done twice, I would know exactly what I was doing next. And it's really nice to not know. And I have no idea, and I don't know how long it'll be. And I love that. I'm very happy to be in that position right now.
I'm going to wrap with you, but I'm sure I'll talk to you again for Alex Cross down the road.
I think we've talked to you in like 3 weeks.
Right. Is that, yeah, let me hit.